T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show with the biggest stories of the day. It's the Big 3 at 3, number one.
All right, Big 3 at 3, Clint, and we heard from Deshaun Watson over the weekend. And the number one thing with him, and I think you could argue right now outside of COVID-19 things, the number one thing in sports, in the NFL, in terms of contracts, is Deshaun Watson. This was Deshaun in speaking about his contract and where he is in terms of a long-term deal with the Texans.
Like I said, the football is my main focus. My agent knows the time limit and things like that. My biggest thing, like I've always been wanting to do since I was a little kid, is just play football, win championship, win games, and compete. So, like I said before, that my agent is taking care of that. And that's, you know, with him in the organization. Like I said, my main focus is being the quarterback and the leader of this team and making sure we're ready for September 10th.
Ooh, Clint, he said his people are handling it, getting ready for September 10th.
Woo! Look here. Deshaun Watson did an unbelievable job addressing the media on Saturday. With everything that's going on, I mean, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's his contract, whether it's DeAndre Hopkins' situation, Bill O'Brien and Easterby in the organization, Tim Kelly being the offensive coordinator, he did a phenomenal job of toeing the line, but not giving a bunch of coach speak. He didn't get out of line.
He loved everybody, didn't he?
Yeah, he let everybody know he loved them. But when it's all said and done, he did say some things that'll make you think. And right there, what I loved about it is my agent knows the timeline. Like, that tells me that there's a timeline on this thing.
First and foremost. Yeah.
And I believe, I told you this last week's show, if I'm Deshaun Watson, there is no way in hell that I'm taking the field and risking an injury when I position myself to be guaranteed $100+ million. There's no way. So with knowing that that's where my mind is right now, I got to believe September 1 is the timeline. They got to get something done. You got a month to do it, essentially. They've got to get something done before he starts prepping for the Kansas City Chiefs. And before, if they were to get something done, it would be a distraction during game week for the Kansas City Chiefs opening weekend.
That's interesting. Do you think Deshaun has that similar mindset that you have?
I do.
We got to have something done. You think so?
No, I don't think that it's...
Because we had McClain on last Friday, and he said, no, he'll take the field. I don't think he'll...
Well, yeah, no, I don't think he'll be put in the position to quit on his team. Like, when McClain was in here talking about, I don't think he'll ever quit on his team. Well, I wasn't suggesting that Deshaun Watson quits on his team. Deshaun Watson has all the power right now. So if Deshaun Watson wants a new deal, and he wants a new deal by September 1 so that it doesn't interfere with the game, then Deshaun Watson will have a new deal before September 1 so it doesn't get in the way of the team preparing for Kansas City. Do I think that if something unforeseen happened and Deshaun got put in a position where he had to play I would imagine Deshaun would play. Deshaun would play, yes.
But that's probably the focus, is we got to get this done before the season starts. There's just no way that I'm going to take the field and risk it.
Yes, I would think that there would have to be some significant some significant problems with the organization or Deshaun Watson if a deal isn't reached by September 1. Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible that Deshaun Watson could end up playing out his contract and playing on playing 3 years on franchise tags. It's possible. It's not the formula for winning football games. It's not the formula for the chemistry your quarterback and your organization need, but it's possible. I don't think that he's going to quit on his team. I just believe that Deshaun Watson is in the mindset of, I position myself with my play on the field to be guaranteed $100+ million. It's in my best interest to get this thing done before September 1.
Yeah, I think the big things out of that was he said time limit, which is deadline.
Yes.
And he said he has one. I don't know if it's September 1st. I don't know what it is. But he has put it out there that he and his team have a deadline. And I believe they will meet that deadline.
Bingo.
Because I think both sides want to get it done, right? They're not. I don't think Bill and Jack are fooling around. Let me slow down. This is Kyle McNair involved in this too with
right.
this player. I don't think that those three want to fool around with this. They'll get it done. But it is telling because I remember Russell Wilson had a deadline last year that he wanted to have hit when his contract was coming out. And when these quarterbacks do it, he at least opened that. And like I said earlier, it is very key to know that Deshaun chooses his words. He knows what he's coming up here to say.
Yeah.
And practice this. And to say we got a time limit lets you know there is a deadline.
So, he ain't talking about no time limit of next August.
He's
talking about a time limit because they're up against it. You know, they got a couple of weeks to get this thing done. I just can't see if they're all thinking right how they don't get this deal done at the very latest by September 1.
Big 3-3, number 2.
All right, a huge sports weekend here in Houston. And the Rockets, they go 2-0 this weekend, beating the Dallas Mavericks Friday night in overtime and then defeating the Milwaukee Bucks, the NBA's best record and one of the three heavy favorites in terms of title contenders along with the Clippers and Lakers. They beat them, and there was an amazing stat last night to tell you how interesting and almost impossible of a win it was last night for the Rockets. The Bucks became the first team in NBA history to lose a game in which they scored at least 110 points. They scored 116, held an opponent under 40% shooting. They held the Rockets at 39%, and then out-rebounded a team by at least 25. They out-rebounded them by 29. Those teams in that scenario all time were 177-0 until the Rockets beat the Bucks last night. Those were two huge wins and an improbable win, and I will not hear it for those who will tell me that win last night against the Bucks wasn't a big win for them.
Yeah, it was a big win. There's zero doubt about it. I think when you look at what the Rockets needed to do and what they needed to accomplish in this 8-game stretch of regular season basketball that's going to be played, it was to either finish in the sixth seed or higher. And I believe hell, beating the Bucks alone was a step in the right direction. But beating the Bucks and the Mavs the first two games of the season all but solidified that sixth seed or better. So yeah, these were big time wins. Show, and when you talk about the Bucks game itself, all the things that you just mentioned, the crazy thing is the Rockets are the only team that won given all those stats. And hell, the Rockets didn't play anywhere near their best basketball. They didn't play anywhere near. They didn't shoot the ball anywhere near how they're capable of shooting the basketball, and they still beat the Milwaukee Bucks, the best defense in the NBA. They put up what they put up, 120 last night.
Yep.
So this was a eye-opening weekend for the Rockets for sure.
I don't know how some people approach sports. I am the type of person that I look at things and I think to myself, all right, what are potential pitfalls down the way, even in wins. And the one thing that was a bit eye-opening was, hey, man, PJ, P.J. Tucker, Jeff Green, Robert Covington, they missed 34 threes.
Ooh. Last night alone?
Over the weekend.
Over the weekend.
Over the weekend. They missed 34 threes.
That's terrible.
Over the weekend. And, man, I know you brought all them damn shoes down there. You brought 91 pairs of shoes. I think you should have taken all 91 of them into a gym last night. You ain't got nothing else to do to start getting corner threes up.
Hey,
I mean, 0 for 6 in the first half, for God's sakes. I mean, PJ.
I mean, he was 1 for 11 at one point.
They would have run away with that game if Jeff Green and PJ Tucker could hit corner threes. Covington was 1 for 9 against the Mavericks. They got to do better than that.
I'm not worried about P.J. Tucker, though. P.J. Tucker in that corner three is as good as – that's like Springer hitting. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and I'm not concerned. But I'll tell you this, Joe. Did you see him turn and run down the court when the second half started after he made a three and glance over at the general manager, Daryl Morey? The announcers made it sound like, oh, you look over at the general manager and tell him you found your shot. You know, ha, 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 ha. It's cute. Man, they throw the thing in slow motion. P.J. Tucker, I seen that look before. That was one of those shut the hell up, I got this type of look.
Wasn't just competitive.
No, it wasn't just, hey GM, hey Mr. Morey, check it out, I found my shot. No, it was and I don't know if he was looking at Daryl Morey. That's what the announcer said. Daryl Morey was not in the screen, but whoever in the hell P.J. Tucker was looking at, it was a disgusted look. It wasn't friendly.
Yeah, he knew he was one for whatever the hell he was.
Big 3-3, number 3.
All right, this is big with the Astros. Probably the biggest news over the weekend. They were 2 of 3, but the Astros had to place closer Roberto Osuna on the 10-day injured list prior to Sunday's game against the Angels with right elbow soreness. Here is Dusty Baker yesterday on the issue with Roberto Osuna.
He just said he had some, discomfort in his arm. And so we're sending him back to Houston to get it checked and to get an MRI. So we really don't know yet. I mean, it's a real downer that, you know, when he signals you to come out, boy, that's not the news you want to hear. We just have to wait after he sees a doctor.
Man, Clint, I mean, this bullpen just keeps taking hits, man. Now Ryan Pressly is the only non-rookie in the bullpen, and they also, Dusty had to walk out with the trainer with him on Saturday because he cut his finger because he was bleeding out there. I mean, this bullpen and pitching staff overall just keeps taking hits. And you could argue it with Osuna and Verlander, those are the ones, your number one starter and your closer, that you just cannot lose.
Groin was pretty beat up in there.
It's a tough situation right now for the Astros. There's no doubt about it. That's why I hesitate to question anything any decision that Brent Strom and Dusty Baker make with the staff. I just can't. I'm not in a position to question anything they do because what they're dealing with is, they are handcuffed. They are hamstrung. However you want to slice it, they're in a bad situation with the pitching staff. One thing I do know though is that the bullpen's fixing to get a little help. Josh James he got to go back to the bullpen.
I thought you were going to say Fernando Rodney.
No, him too. Bring Fernando Rodney. look, his old at 43 years old. Wave cap with the new era with the 5950.
Sugarland Skeeters.
Come on in, skeet. Come on in, baby. I'm in on that. But look here,
so nasty.
You add him, and then you add Josh James. Now you got something to at least go to. I tell you. I will judge Dusty Baker if he continues to throw Josh James' ass out there and let him walk better.
You brought up the good point of, man, what he's dealing with in the bullpen. I mean, if you've ever played spades, he's got a hand of Ryan Pressly, Blake Taylor, and a bunch of possums. That's what he's got in his hand. Like, you don't know what you're going out there to get. Stubbs, I think he's a book. I think. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe Rodriguez, maybe I can cut him with this. He's out there with a bunch of possible out there. And I'm just like, man, you gotta calm down a little bit on Dusty. Here's some other news coming out of baseball as we finish up the big three. This is from Jeff Passan a few minutes ago that the St. Louis Cardinals have 13 people in their organization who have tested positive for COVID-19. It was 2 when we talked Friday. And sources confirmed to ESPN 7 of them are Cardinal players.
Man, come
their
on.
Games were canceled.
What'd
over
they
the weekend.
Do? What'd they do?
Well, we've heard there have been some rumors that there have been some players who dipped out to a casino.
Come on, man. Stay your ass out the street.
Did you have to play blackjack?
It ain't that hard. Was that blackjack?
I believe that's what they was playing. I'm just guessing.
Oh, you think they were playing?
I think they was.
Surely they were rolling dice.
Maybe some of them. I feel like that was a poker slash blackjack crew. Now those teams you played with,
hold on, so
the Cowboys were some dice throwers. This crew, I believe,
this crew was dancing around the blackjack table, aren't you?
Blackjack table. All right, Clint, man. So many people are missing the point on why the Texans' offense will be better than it was last year, and I know many of you don't want to listen to us when we say it, but the quarterback, Deshaun Watson, will spell it out for you in his own words. We've got that coming up next.
Brian, let me stop you right there.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
We've heard so much about, they've lost DeAndre Hopkins. Bill O'Brien is going to still call plays. They're not as talented as they were last year. David Johnson stinks. And I have been one who has been steadfast. As soon as the Brandon Cooks move was made, I said, I think this offense is going to be better than last year's offense. I think this offense has a chance to be a top 10 offense. And the biggest reason I felt that way, Clint, the quarterback of the Houston Texans feels the same way. Listen to who Deshaun Watson is speaking of, and I think it is the reason why you have to look at the Texans' offense and think it's got a real chance to be the best offense it's been since Bill O'Brien's been here.
I feel like having that group and that chemistry back is going to be great. I know if you look back, especially last year, our starting five O-line, we've been very, very dominant and we've been very successful, when all five of those guys are playing at the same time. So if we can keep those guys healthy through a full season and build that chemistry, those guys look really, really good.
The biggest reason why I have been so encouraged, Clint, for this offense to be better than last year, yes, I like the parts around of the weapons, but it's Tunsil. It's Sharpling, it's Martin, it's Fulton, and it's Howard.
It all starts up front, baby. There's no doubt about it. It all starts up front. You want to talk about a quarterback having superior confidence, like a quarterback having extreme confidence in not just his ability, but in what the offense is capable of doing. Line him up five cats at the offensive line position, in front of him in a huddle or in front of him at the line of scrimmage, that he has extreme confidence in those guys, whether it's a run game or it's the pass game or it's fighting through adversity against one of the best players in the league and just holding down, the fort long enough for him to make enough plays to win a game. Either way you slice it, there's nothing more powerful in the game of football, whether high school, college, or the big leagues. There's nothing more powerful than a confident, talented offensive line, experienced offensive line. And so, there is zero doubt outside of Deshaun Watson's skill and the fact that you think there's no doubt about it. You know he's going to develop from last year to this year. Outside of that, in terms of this team taking the next step and being better, the offensive line being together, being a year experienced more together, is huge.
Yeah, the offensive line to me is why I have so much confidence that this offense will be better than it was last year and be the best offensive line or the best offense Bill O'Brien's had here. There's no other position group that's been affected more since that CBA was signed where they couldn't have padded practices as much and they couldn't hit as much because offensive line play has dropped in the last 5 to 7 years. Because they just can't hit as much. They can't go at it at practice as much. And so when you have a group that is used to playing with each other and a group that's used to lining up and they've played games together, and this ain't just a group that is good because they played together a long time. You got two talented guys, especially at the tackle positions, that teams would love to have, right? And I think your center is really, really good. And the only spot that you really look and wonder about is Zach Fulton. And I think he's a solid player and will be helped by the continuity. This is a group that's played together and they are talented. Like, I just, they're going to allow the offense to do so many different things in the passing game and in the running game that they haven't been able to consistently do. The best thing you could say in the passing game this group does is go down the field. This offensive line will allow more plays than they've been able to have in the past to be able to do that.
You know, one unique thing, first off, is like I don't worry about Fulton. And I know he's one guy where everybody felt like there could have been an upgrade at that position. I don't worry about him as much as I worry about Sharping and Howard being in year two, Howard coming off an injury. I worry about the two young guys more than I do Fulton. I don't worry about any of them to a degree where I go, uh-oh, what are they going to do? But if you go, hey, Clint, what's your biggest concern about Tunsil, Sharping, Martin, Fulton, and Howard? I would say I'm concerned about the two young guys being in year two and not continuing to develop, maybe to stall in their development a little bit. Howard, maybe he continues to get injured and is not reliable. Those are the two right there. The young cats are the two that I would be more concerned about than the others. I'm not concerned about the offensive line at all, but if I were, those are the two. Here's the thing that those five, when they're healthy, here's what I think we don't discuss enough. Like last year and years before, one reason that they were so good in taking shots down the field outside of Deshaun Watson and Fuller and Hopkins are just really good at those, happen to be really good at those things, is because one thing that the offense had to do to get the ball down the field was max protect. And when you max protect and you're running two-man routes, then you can, if you're running short routes, the defense will smother you. And so you've got to max protect so that your Hopkins and your Fullers can get over the top or can push the defense deep and get Hopkins open underneath. You have to, they had to do those things in situations throughout the game when they needed to move the football. They were very limited otherwise because they didn't trust the offensive line. When you have to keep tight ends in to help block,
that's
you have
a really
to keep,
good point.
When you keep backs in and they have to help the tackles block, then your underneath routes are they're just not there because they're in the backfield blocking. When you have to max protect, your quarterback, we talked about Deshaun Watson struggling getting through progressions, right? Well, a lot of times that those guys were in blocking, so the checkdowns aren't even part of that particular play. So, yeah, they did that really well, but unfortunately they were forced into that situation a lot. And so these five guys, the offensive line, especially with Howard and Tunsil at the outside, the two tackles, those guys give you an opportunity to go, you know what, spread the tight ends out. You know what, get the running backs out. Make them number one. Let's design some plays where David Johnson or Duke Johnson are the number one read versus these certain looks, because we're going to get them out. To hell with it. We're going to get them out. We don't even want them staying in and chipping. At least you have the opportunity to do those things. I don't know if that's been the case. I know
that's
sure ain't been. I don't think it's been the case since Smitty's group back in 2010. I think it was when they had that really good offensive line. They were run heavy and had Andre Johnson and some of these other guys. They didn't necessarily run a wide open offense the way that Deshaun Watson and Tim Kelly should design this Texans offense. But they had the ability up front to go, hey, as long as they don't bring more than five, we got you, Shab. As long as they don't bring more than five, we got you, baby. This offensive line is going to give the Texans that opportunity.
You're right, because they probably had to take receivers off the field and put like a receiver and replace it with another tight end to max protect, and then it makes your routes more predictable. And they were still really good at it.
Think about that, show. I mean, the trickle-down effect of those types of deals. Like, let's say Darren Fells is your best blocking tight end, right? Okay, so guess what? Darren Fells has got to be in on third and eight. Instead of take Darren Fells out, put Jordan Akins in the game, who's a better athlete.
Yep.
Gives you, so you don't even, as a play caller, you go, well, damn, I can't bring Aiken in the game and give myself the advantage with the more athletic tight end because I've got to leave the best blocker in there because he's got to help the right tackle, right? Think about in terms of I'd love to use Duke Johnson, and I don't know that Duke Johnson is fine blocking out of the backfield, but I would love to use Duke Johnson more often in the pass game. But I can't. I got to leave Carlos Hyde in the game because Carlos Hyde is the better pass blocker. And so now I can't use Duke Johnson the way that I want to use Duke Johnson. So there's – and again, I'm not – I don't know that Carlos Hyde was a better blocker than Duke Johnson, just making the point. So those are things that an offensive coordinator really, really struggles with. It, like, you're really handcuffed because you just – you can't. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And this offensive line show, I'm more excited about the offensive line than I am any addition to this team.
People just downplay the importance of that. And it shouldn't be here. It shouldn't be here because you got to see it. Like, someone's texting in about, oh, Deshaun's got to get his turnovers down. He had 12 interceptions and 6 fumbles. That's not elite quarterbacking. Like, all right, even if you want to use that stat, this offensive line can even help with that.
Yeah.
Because he's by the way, the year that Mahomes threw 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, and won the MVP, you'd have to say he was elite. He threw 12 interceptions.
That is awesome.
So, I mean, I guess elite quarterbacks do that.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Look, Deshaun doesn't make poor decisions from the pocket in terms of throwing the football. Where Deshaun does, the good point of that text right there, Deshaun does, he puts himself in some scary spots with trying to lateral the ball when he's getting sacked and taking too many hits in the pocket. So he's got to take better care of the football, but it's not with his decision-making in terms of throwing the football down the field. He's pretty damn good at that.
All right, a big story was developing Friday and still is as we see the Saints make a move that the NFL may look to trying to go to a possible bubble for a certain period of time to really protect its athletes from the coronavirus. Mike Florio was one of the first people to have that story and report on that, the potential bubble for the NFL. We'll get the latest from him and where the NFL may go in that decision. We've got Mike Florio coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
All right, welcome back in. It's a developing here with the NFL, and Mike Florio of NBC Sports Pro Football Talk first kind of put this out Friday. We were looking at this about a potential bubble situation that the NFL is doing in terms of maybe getting hotels and having players and support staff be in hotels like in a bit of a bubble for a certain period of time. We see the Saints are looking at doing that, if not are going to do that. And I'm curious from you, Mike, and we thank you for joining us. How real is this that the NFL is going to really look at developing some kind of bubble? Because we've just heard all along the NFL, they just can't do that.
Well, there's two different kinds of bubbles, guys. There's the bubble that would put every team in the same location, like we're seeing with basketball and hockey and MLS. And then there's the bubble that would be each team sequestered from the rest of society, leaving only to go play games. And the Saints apparently are doing that as it relates to camp. Other teams are doing something similar where everyone stays in a hotel. They don't go home. The question is whether or not it would extend beyond camp and whether or not the teams would have the right to do it. Presumably, the union would have to agree to that because you're talking about a major change of circumstances for the players. If they're told they can't go anywhere, that they have to stay in a hotel the entire season. So I think it's something that, number one, should be negotiated between the league and the union. And number two, it should be. They need to be having this conversation. They still haven't put pen, paper up on the revision of the collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated 10 days ago. I think they need to have, at a minimum, as an emergency option, if there are, come up with parameters as to what it would take to kick in this hardened bubble on a per-team basis. It would be foolish to not account for that because I think that's where we potentially are headed. If we try this baseball-style approach where everybody goes home at night, potentially gets the virus, brings it to the facility, brings it onto a football field at some point. We may have outbreaks. I think you minimize the chances of outbreaks if you can convince everybody to just go to one location and stay there for the entire season. It wouldn't be cheap. It wouldn't be cheap for the players because they'd want to be compensated for that, but it may be the only way to get the games in.
Well, you dang sure minimize the trips to Magic City and the casinos like you're seeing in baseball. So I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, I remember being in camp with the Cowboys, and it was a bubble. I mean, and I know it wasn't 4 months long, but it was a damn bubble, and there was no way to contact other people. So it's possible. I think players are used to it. I think it's something that they should definitely entertain. Mike, what is a – you said the negotiation aspect of this. That's the piece of the pie here that's difficult, right? What does that look like? How long does it take? What are some of the details that they may cover? Do you have any idea what that looks like?
Well, they got a deal done 10 days ago that allowed camps to open. But in this process of taking the deal that they negotiated and putting it in writing, and basically what they're doing is writing up an entirely new collective bargaining agreement, because it deals with issues like player safety, the pandemic protocols, the financial aspect of it. What will players be paid this year? What happens if games are missed? What happens with the salary cap next year? Now, they reached agreement on all those principles, but when you reduce it to writing, things come up. One of the issues that has emerged is that the league would like to adjust the date for the opt-out deadline, that it's supposed to be 7 days after they sign the agreement. The league wants to make it sooner than that. They don't like the fact that some guys who may be on their way to being cut are opting out and taking a stipend, and other players may be trying to use the possibility of an opt-out to get more money or a new contract or something, anything from the team. So they want to slam the door on that. That's led to more negotiations. The deal still isn't done, and I don't know when it's going to be done. Every time I check, I'm told maybe today. I check the next day, maybe today. I check the next day, maybe today. And it tells me that maybe the league just wanted to get the players into camp and then worry about buttoning up some of these details and maybe addressing some terms the league wanted. So that's what's going on. At some point, we're going to have a document that spells out all these terms, but I get the impression these terms are potentially changing as these negotiations continue.
We're joined by Mike Florio of NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk. Right here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. So what is the relationship right now, I think, between the players and the league? I know we saw with baseball, it was very, very contentious, and it was very, very public. We hear McCourty, the safety with the Patriots, really upset that they're moving the date in terms of when you can opt out, moving it up from what you was first promised. Like, I look at this, and I think it sounds like a good idea. I have a hard time seeing that the players would ever even sign off on some sort of a bubble, and I'm just curious, is the relationship even in a place where you could see that happening?
Well, I think the relationship behind the scenes isn't as bad as maybe we saw a couple of weeks ago. Remember that Sunday afternoon when a bunch of high-profile players started banging on the NFL on social media? Look, they got a deal done that ended all of that. Now that the players are in camp, they're focused on their jobs. So the NFLPA leadership and the league negotiators can focus on whatever it is that they need to get resolved. But I think that the leadership of the union understands that there's a shared obligation and a shared incentive to come up with a mechanism for getting the season in. The question becomes, if it looks like the intended approach of letting guys go home at night, and it's not just guys going out and doing things they shouldn't do. You've got people you live with who are out and about, people who may have family members with jobs. If schools are open, you're going to have kids going out and potentially bringing home the virus. Every time a player goes home, they're potentially going to catch the virus, bring it back, and slip through the cracks during that 24-hour lag between sample collection and test result. So I think the union understands there is an incentive to being flexible. And maybe the thinking is, let's try it this way. If it looks like it's not going to work, then we're going to have to do something more extreme. And I could envision a situation where the union agrees everybody's going to be in a hardened, localized bubble. They're going to stay in a hotel. Players will have another narrow window to opt out if they just don't want to do that, if they want to be with their family. And that's their right if they make that choice. And then there's going to be other players who flock for the opportunity to play NFL football. We know how that goes. There is a supply of potential NFL players that far outweighs the demand. And if guys start opting out, plenty of other guys are going to opt in. And they'll get the games played. I think the chances of getting the games played are dramatically higher if they have a hardened bubble, city by city. Guys don't leave. Guys just go from hotel to practice facility to games on the weekends, and that's it. They get the games in. Everybody makes their money. And then when the season's over, everybody goes home. I mean, look, it's a hardship, but these are unusual times. And if we want to get the games in, and if the players want to make their money, and the league wants to make their money, this may be the only way to do it. And they need to be ready to pivot to it once we get to the point where we see whether or not outbreaks are happening.
Mike, what about for the time being? I mean, it seems like just some of the teams deciding to go to a localized bubble in their own city versus some of them just continuing to go back and forth between home just for training camp alone could become a problem. Could something like that, One, could it be put in place where all teams have to have some form or fashion of a bubble? And if not, could that affect the start date for the season?
Well, here's the thing. If it's permissible for one team to have a localized bubble for training camp, it should be permissible for every team to do it. I don't know why every team isn't doing it. If it's allowed under the CBA for the Saints to do it, apparently the Vikings are doing something like that, and other teams may be doing it. I talked to Matt Ryan last week. They've got townhouses behind the team facility where the players have individual bathrooms, changing areas, beds. Why not just have them stay there for all of training camp? If it's permissible currently under the CBA, it would be foolish to not do it in order to limit the opportunities for an outbreak to happen before it's time to play the first set of games. And then it pivots to a new reality when it's time to play the games. You at least get the first week of the season in. You see what happens. The testing technology is getting better all the time. If they can get to the point where you can show up and be tested and know within a half hour or 45 minutes reliably whether or not you're positive then and there, that changes the game. So I don't know why anybody, if it's permissible, why any team wouldn't have a hardened bubble in their city unless they just don't want to pay the money for all the hotel rooms, which, of course, some owners probably fall into that category, but they don't want to pay the money for the hotel rooms, and they can just send the players home and say, see you back at work tomorrow.
Mike Florio, NBC Sports Pro Football Talk, joining us. Just quickly, how much would you say the NFL's decisions are being based on what they're seeing from other sports like Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, MLS, and the NBA?
I think they're paying attention to everything, but the problem is hockey, basketball, MLS have that league-wide bubble, which eliminates one of the major risk factors, which is guys leaving work. Baseball is the thing that is most comparable to football, and when we see the stories about the Marlins players apparently testing positive because they were doing things that they shouldn't do, that gives coaches and team leaders even more ammunition and cause to stand up and say in the team meeting rooms, hey guys, look, we can't be screwing around. This is what we need to do. We need to do these things the right way, or we're going to be in the same situation. And the way they've negotiated this agreement, you get paid as you play. So if there's an outbreak that knocks out a game, and if you're the one who's responsible for that outbreak, if they trace it all back to you as the one who brought the virus to the facility and the team misses a game and everyone loses a game check, it's going to be ugly for whoever it is that they can point to and say, you're the reason why we have this. So baseball's struggles, I think, make it easier to try to get the attention of the players. It's still not foolproof, but I think the fact that baseball's had some struggles could make it easier for the NFL to get its players to do what they need to do. And not just the players, the coaches, the staff, anybody who gets into the building needs to be on board with this idea of doing everything they can to make sure that they're not bringing the virus into the building.
Real quick, I wanted to get you out on this, Mike. Deshaun Watson spoke to the media this weekend, and he said, yeah, he's talked to his agent. His people know they've been in contact with the Texans. They have a timeline is something that he said. Anything that you're hearing that Deshaun Watson will have a deal done before the season?
I haven't heard anything specifically in that regard, but look at this way. When Billy O'Brien's both the coach and the GM of the team, and Billy O'Brien, the coach, has plenty of stuff to worry about going into this season, Billy O'Brien, the GM, could do Billy O'Brien, the head coach, a hell of a favor by taking one thing off of his table that he's going to otherwise have to worry about going through this season, and that's getting Deshaun Watson's deal done. Now, the problem is money is down this year. Salary cap's going to be down next year. How do you structure a deal that gives Deshaun Watson what he wants? But remember, the talk is it's going to be a three-year extension when it's done. He'd be under contract for 5 years. The challenge is, what's the total dollars? What's the signing bonus? What's the full guarantee at signing? What's the cash flow over the first 3 years? And I think from Deshaun Watson's perspective, a lot of the argument is going to be to the team, pay no attention to what Patrick Mahomes did, because on those three metrics, Mahomes' deal stinks. And I don't know how much quarterbacks are going to have to deal with those Mahomes terms, but this is the first major quarterback contract, if it's negotiated in the near term, that's going to be done right after Mahomes, and I think Deshaun Watson's agents are probably going to have to spend some time distancing themselves from the deal that Mahomes did.
Mike, you said if it's done. When I look at what Deshaun Watson's done in his career to this point, I mean, he's due, I think I looked at it last week, this next 2 years on his contract, it's a little over $20 million, I believe, roughly. He's made $11 million on the field earnings, obviously. When you look at those numbers and you know you've positioned yourself to be a $100 million a guy, guaranteed guy. How do you even take the field and risk an injury? I know it's rare, but that does happen. How do you even take the field again without a deal?
Well, what can you do? You can't hold out once you're there. You're not going. I don't think he's going to draw that line and say I won't play unless I have a deal. You know, it wouldn't be unprecedented, but I think it's very difficult to do that. I think that you just have to go out and get yourself a gigantic insurance policy that will cover you in the event that you go into the season without a deal. But, you know, the question becomes, how happy do you want Deshaun Watson to be? There's no reason for the Texans to ever risk losing Deshaun Watson. But the reality is, you know, we see players who flex their muscles and get out of situations they don't want to be in who aren't quarterbacks. We haven't seen a quarterback do that yet. We've seen Jalen Ramsey do it. We've seen Jamal Adams do it recently. If you're a starting quarterback for a team and you decide you don't want to be there anymore, it shouldn't be all that hard to get out, because you're the guy that shows up early, stays late, is the team leader, sets the example. If you say, I'm just doing the bare minimum, I just work here, it's going to be hard to have a franchise quarterback fully in that title and that role and with all of the influence that goes along with it. So I don't think the Texans want to play that game. I just think from the standpoint of making sure that their guy's happy and wants to be there, that is the thing that should influence the Texans to get this deal done more than anything else. Not a threat to sit out, just the reality. You want your quarterback to be happy, and if he gets to the point where he's not happy, you got a problem.
Mike, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today. We appreciate your knowledge on this situation, and we'll talk to you later on, man.
All right, guys. Good talking to you.
All right. That's Mike Florio. The way it sounds, man, especially getting back to the bubble stuff, like when you hear situations like the Falcons who have housing behind.
It's literally right next. I've stayed in them before. We went down and played the Atlanta arena team, and we had a joint practice type deal down there for a couple of days with them, and it's literally across the street from the field.
It's enough to house.
It's an apartment complex.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't remember how many buildings it consisted of, but there's.
Was it better than Wichita Falls?
Hell yes. they were nice. They were hell yeah. They were. It was really nice. Yeah. No. It was more. They were money. It makes no sense for them. I mean, it'd be a little bit more difficult for the Texans because, again, like, you know, there's a couple of hotels right there, you know, in the parking lot essentially of NRG and the Astrodome right there. I don't know how many rooms are there, if they could. I'm assuming they could house 120 guys. Either way it goes, but
80. Well, I guess 120 when you add
you got coaches.
Staff,
well, yeah, I would guess that's the lowest they could go. But nonetheless, I mean, it'd be a little bit more difficult than it would in Atlanta. But yeah, it makes zero sense for each team to not bubble up.
No, I mean, you say. I mean, when you look at, okay, the Marlins were one thing. Now we're looking at the Cardinals, and if you missed it, they got 13 guys that they have had now in their organization test positive since Friday. 13 now, right? Now their series is postponed with the Tigers. You just see two teams like that, and God, you could just see that spreading in the end. They got to look at that stuff and say to themselves, man, we got to try to do something. And the players too,
yeah.
To me, I think have to be a part of it.
To me, man, if you're J.J. Watt, if you're Deshaun Watson, if you're Whitney Mercilus, and you want to play football this year, I don't see how it's not in their best interest, because ultimately those are the guys they're going to do right. They're going to go home. They're going to isolate from anybody out, anybody, anywhere. They're not going to go into the ones you got to worry about is the bottom 50% of the team going home, getting bored. I'm not a starter. I can go here. I can go there. Just doing something innocently and bringing it back to the team. And so, I mean, even the guys that are the voices and the faces of each organization, it would be in their best interest to bubble up for about 6 weeks.
This is from the text line. Clint, why don't you just give these guys who should be adults and make them be adults to make adult decisions rather than having to place where they need to live?
Place? Well, because I've been one of those guys that made poor decisions when my job depended on it. It's not a room full of everybody doesn't walk, talk, think, and feel the way that J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson do. I mean, there's just a different Kyle, if these baseball players can't even get in line, it would be an absolute mess to not bubble these guys up. Yeah.
Audio from Deshaun Watson that you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.